Red Sea is where we are later. I'll show you again. So we have 43 communities that are evacuated and 60,000 people. This is 60,000 people.
Okay. Will it try not to move a lot? Yes.
Thank you.
You confirm the train?
Yes, it's good.
Yeah, okay. So we are running.
Yeah, all right, Tariq, just on camera, can you please tell me your name and title?
Yeah. My name is Farid Zahavi. I'm the founder and president of ALMA Research and Education Center.
All right, so tell me, what is ALMA Center?
ALMA Center is all about creating a platform of knowledge about Israel's security challenges on the northern borders in English to people outside of Israel. We use sources from Arabic and Hebrew, mainly Arabic, social media and media. And we write in-depth reports, crossing the information also with terrain analysis. And that way we get important and interesting information about what's going on, about the Hezbollah deployment in Lebanon, Iranian deployment in the region, what's going on the northern borders, the challenges.
And tell me about these challenges right now. This is really a situation to call it unprecedented.
Well, now we are, it's kind of, we are kind of in the before. If in the south of Israel, everybody is speaking about the day after, here we feel that we are in the day before. We just don't know before what. Because we know that on the other side of the border, there is a terrorist organization that is the long arm of Iran over here, that has intentions and capabilities to launch the same massacre as Hamas had done in the south, and much more than that, because it has 10 times more missiles and rockets than Hamas. And that's why I'm saying we don't know how is this going to look like. If it's going to be a full-scale war, this is an option. When it's going to be a full-scale war, we are already experiencing war. We have 43 communities that are evacuated with 60,000 Israelis that in the past 8 months cannot go back to their homes because they are worried about the scenario of a massacre and because every day there are attacks from Lebanon. The past month, we even saw a raise in the amount of attacks coming from Lebanon. That's almost double. We had an average of around 50 attacks every week, pretty stable during this war. But in the past month, it raised to between 70 to 90. And mostly drones, suicide drones, that succeed in crossing into Israel and attack different areas. But also rockets that are launched in barrages, sometimes 80 rockets, sometimes 20, sometimes 30, and also anti-tank missiles, which in opposed to the rockets, we cannot intercept and we don't have alerts before they are launched. And that's why to bring back the people that are living right next to the border, the threat of an anti-tank is very realistic. Even though the IDF was deployed on the border, so the threat of a massacre is not that realistic as it used to be at the beginning of the war. The threat of the anti-tanks is very realistic and it is happening every day.
So what about these people? You mentioned 60,000 people. It's been about 8 months now.
Yes.
Many of them have been able to see their home.
Most of them didn't come back, and if they did, only for a few minutes or hours. They are afraid to come back. There are areas which we can't even go and see the damages of the attacks of Hezbollah because it's too dangerous. Some of them still live in hotels. Some of them rented apartments and registered their children to new schools and found new jobs. It means that it will be more difficult for them to come back. To live in a hotel in one room, the whole family, it's also challenging for 8 months. It's not a vacation. And we hear of a lot of problems within the evacuee population. And that's why I'm saying that for us, the people who are living here, and also there are many people who were not evacuated, like myself, I live 9 kilometers from the border with Lebanon, we experience the war as well. We hear the sounds of war, we smell the burnings, and we see the blasts, and it's not normal life to raise kids like that. You know, when my little girl says that she's afraid of any sound that sounds like sirens, and it's not sirens, not always sirens, It's not a normal way to raise your kids. And like myself, there are 300,000 people that are experiencing the war over here in the north, even though they are not evacuated.
And this is a huge threat, isn't it, posed by the so-called axis of resistance, the proxy.
So what I didn't mention, I focused on what is coming from Lebanon, but actually what Iran had done was to develop proxies all over the Middle East, and it is activating these proxies actually since October 7th. The war in the north started in October 8th, and Hezbollah started to attack Israel in October 8th. In the Red Sea, you saw the Houthis joining in very quickly. In Iraq and Syria, you saw the attacks against American forces that were stopped in February. I'm not sure completely stopped, but in generally stopped. You also see in West Bank a lot of tries of terrorists in West Bank to create a campaign from there as well, while Iran is encouraging that and smuggling munition into West Bank as well.
And since the last Lebanon war, since 2006, tell me about the advancement of weapons and that sort of thing that the Iranians, that Hezbollah has.
Look, in 2006, when the war ended, we had an arrangement that was supposed to bring security to northern Israel. And we thought that this arrangement is working because there were very few attacks, very few, I mean a few tens in 17 years. That's very few in Israeli terms, okay? But actually what was happening, which we didn't understand, is that Hezbollah and Iran changed their approach. And there was a decision made not to focus on small attacks, but to focus on a preparation for a bigger campaign. And what we see now is the bigger campaign that brought Israelis out of their homes. That attacks are carried out every day from various places along the borderline, with an arsenal of rockets and missiles, which is 10 times more than what Hamas had, meaning around 200,000 different kinds of projectiles. It could be, most of them are to short range of up to 10 kilometers, and others could get, could cover all over the country. I'm talking about tens of thousands of these. Small amount, a few thousand are probably accurate. And I don't even know how to talk about the anti-tanks that I've mentioned because nobody knows how many anti-tanks are there. Nobody knows how many heavy rockets are there, but they are being launched everywhere against Israel and creating a lot of damages. Heavy rockets is half a ton rocket that creates a different damage, and they are not intercepted because they are very heavy and too short range. They are not intercepted. So not the Iron Dome is not a solution for every kind of projectile, and we are under fire every day.
What is the solution?
Nobody knows. All I can say is that there is no solution that comes with that doesn't come with a price, unfortunately. So war, the price would be high for both sides. Hezbollah has the capability to launch 4,000 rockets every day to Israel. That's a huge amount. If Israel will not initiate a war against Hezbollah, this would mean a diplomatic arrangement, right? A diplomatic arrangement that will bring me security? I'm not sure. Because I'm not sure who is going to monitor this diplomatic arrangement. I'm not sure what's the deadline of this diplomatic arrangement. And I'm not sure what's the goal of this diplomatic arrangement, because everybody is talking with me about, in the newspapers, about withdrawal. Hezbollah is entrenched in the towns, in the villages of Lebanon, the Shiite Muslim villages of Lebanon, especially in South Lebanon. It's not going to withdraw. It's not an external militia. We should talk about disarm. It's different. And nobody's talking about disarm. Nobody's talking about an effective mechanism of monitoring. And nobody's talking about a deadline. So what my worst nightmare is that there will be a diplomatic arrangement that will leave the initiative in the hands of Hezbollah to decide when to carry out the next massacre.
And you mentioned the day before, and we've seen the day after, of course, in the south, which is where all the focus is at the moment. What could a war with Lebanon actually look like?
So as I've said, a lot of fire to Israel, thousands of fire of rockets to Israel a day. This means a lot of heat. Iron Dome will not be able to cover everything. we may be cut off electricity, cut off internet. We already seen this happening in Israel in various places during the current war. Difficulties in repairing. The same thing in Lebanon. Hezbollah is using the Lebanese as human shields. Hezbollah is hiding its munition inside the homes and under the homes of the Lebanese. So if we want to eliminate the rockets and the missiles of the military capabilities of Hezbollah, we will have to attack these weapon caches which are inside the homes, which are inside the schools, inside the very civilian infrastructure of the Muslim Shiite society in Lebanon. They will have to evacuate. They will have, and I believe Israel will call them to evacuate if this will be the scenario, as we did in the south. But it is clear to all Israelis that war has a high price. The big question is, if we won't initiate war, whether the price would be higher. And because, again, the motivation to initiate a devastating campaign against Israel exists within Hezbollah, and the capability exists as well. Even though IDF is also attacking in Lebanon as we speak, it didn't eliminate the threat.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, diplomatic pressure and that sort of thing, but it's also pretty hard to put diplomatic pressure on a proxy like Hezbollah.
And that's why I'm afraid of that scenario, because eventually what will happen is that Israel will implement the agreement and Hezbollah will not. And who will enforce that?
And what about, you know, is the government, can the government do anything? Is the government doing what it should be right now, in your opinion?
Not enough. Look, I feel that there are three things that could be done. Okay, maybe more. With offensive, yes, I think that we can attack more. It's a huge risk of war, but I think we can attack more the military infrastructure of this terrorist organization named Hezbollah. Defensive, we need shelters. We don't have enough shelters here like in the south. And most important, we have to work with the international community. International community has to work with us because Iran is a global threat. And if we will enable Hezbollah to keep its capabilities in Lebanon, it is not only a threat to the state of Israel. First and foremost, it is a threat to Lebanon. And Iraq and Syria were already destroyed. And Lebanon is already a failed state. Iran, the Ayatollahs of Iran's main mission is to spread the Islamic Revolution values everywhere in the world. This is dangerous.
And you mentioned, Tariq, the international community. And what we've been seeing since really over the last few months especially is support for Israel really dropping away. How long can Israel grind on for if another proper front really opens up, if another war begins with Lebanon?
I think that there is not enough knowledge and awareness of international community about the great risk that we are facing. How many people know around the globe that actually Hezbollah had the same plan to invade and to massacre Israelis, but it was actually executed by Hamas and also, capabilities?
Yeah, and also these fighters, these Hezbollah fighters, we were speaking about this in the car, you know, they've got a lot of experience, don't they?
They are different from Hamas, who just were trained. Hezbollah were experienced in the civil war in Syria. And over there, they fought against the rebels, and they won. They occupied villages. They transferred big forces in the battlefield of around brigade level. They know how to coordinate different types of forces in this battlefield. All of this experience was brought to South Lebanon to fight against Israel.
And it's, you know, a massive trauma for these people up here, isn't it? You mentioned kids and stuff. How do you explain this to them?
It's very difficult. Because you don't want to create hate. I don't want to educate my kids to hate anybody. You don't want them to be afraid. And at the same time, you want them to be careful if they hear the sirens. And you need to explain them the reality. And it's very difficult.
extremely complex, and I think this is something that the international community doesn't really understand, is the complexity of this region and the tiny size of Israel compared to sort of the reach of its neighbors.
Yeah, I hear people suggesting, okay, so you evacuated 60,000 people. What's the problem? Yeah, okay, they are safe, they are evacuated. But it doesn't work this way here. Because evacuating 60,000 people sends a message to our enemies that we gave up on this piece of land, and that this is just more encouraging to our enemies to continue and maybe to try to have more. And I think that's part of the trend that we are seeing in the past month.
And I think one other, you know, important point is you mentioned, you know, the Iron Dome obviously can't repel everything. It's not a solution. But when you're looking at a numbers kind of game or point of view from the international standpoint, you know, a massive amount of people, according to the health ministry in Gaza, dead in Gaza. But that death toll on the Israeli side would be much higher, wouldn't it, if Israel didn't have things like the Iron Dome, if Israel didn't have shelters.
First, I must say something around it. How many shelters are there in Gaza? Thousands. Thousands of kilometers of safe shelters that were closed from the civilian population and were used only by Hamas. Hamas, those who hided in the tunnels, they're still alive, we're still fighting them. Okay? The same happens in Lebanon. Hezbollah use underground infrastructure that will be used by its military operatives, putting the civilians deliberately at risk. That's the tactic, the human shield tactic. So the whole idea of comparing the toll of death, which is truly unfortunate and soaring, is not a way to fight terror. Because the whole idea of terror is especially religiously motivated terror, like we see now, is a terror that wish to sacrifice its own people. And the Israeli society is a society that raises children to life. Life are secret. In the perception of Hezbollah, death is secret. So, you know, if we want to measure international law or the issue of damage to civilian population, what we should look at in order to have an effective campaign against terror is who is dedicating what to save lives. Doesn't matter which life, whether it's Israelis or Lebanese or Palestinian, it doesn't matter. And then we'll find out that Israel is dedicating much more resources to save the lives of its enemies than its enemies by themselves.
So what is the main message, I'm checking my friend very quickly, what is the main message that you would really like the international community to understand, given the complexities of this region, given, you know, even the underreporting right now of the situation in the north?
That we are, as I've said in the before, we are on a verge of war over here in the north, which we didn't initiate, we didn't want. We have no business in Lebanon. I wish I could go to Lebanon as a tourist. I wish there was peace with the Lebanese. We are dealing with enemies that want me out of here and maybe even want me dead. And that's why eventually we'll have to fight these enemies, because we cannot just sit still after what happened in October 7th and wait till our enemies will attack us. And as a former intelligence officer, I can tell you that we will be surprised again if we will not eliminate the capabilities of our enemies. Because we think differently from them, it's really difficult to predict their intentions. And that's why the only way to protect ourselves is to eliminate the threat, or at least damage the threat. And we need the support of the international community in this, because it's not just against us. This war is not Israel-Hamas war. This war is the war of the Iranian Shiite axis against the Western presence in the Middle East, which is Israel. Israel is perceived as the Western presence in the Middle East.
You said something really interesting before. You know, you do tons of your specialties, obviously, intel gathering. You said you know, propaganda isn't always propaganda, is it?
We think the propaganda is automatically a lie. I think the propaganda should be dealt like any other information. It could be a lie and it could be truth. In any case, it doesn't indicate on capabilities. It does indicate on the ideology. It does indicate on the plan. And we can learn a lot of how the other side thinks when we read its propaganda, especially when we read its propaganda in its own language, meaning that actually it's not propaganda towards Israel. We are not the target audience, and you are not the target audience. The target audience is the base of Hezbollah or the base of the Ayatollahs of Iran, whatever, that depends on the language, if it's Persian or Arabic. And most of the propaganda that I've shown you is not in Hebrew or in English. We made the English translation. Most of the propaganda is in Arabic. It is meant to mobilize the people to be part of this campaign against the State of Israel.
I think that's great, and I know it might be sort of intel classified sort of stuff, but
I don't have any intel classified sort of stuff.
And how do we gather all of this information?
Everything comes, there is no secrets here. Okay, secrets is elsewhere. Over here we gather the information from open sources, social media, and the secret, or the trick, if you like, is that in some, not in all cases, but in some cases, we found that we can cross information between words and terrain, because today with Google Earth and Google Map, it's pretty easy to do it. You have the satellite images of Google, that's not a problem. And we are doing that a lot.
I think that's great. Anything else you want to add? Do you think it's important?
No, I think it's fine.
I think we covered it, yeah.
Pretty much.
Great. Really good.
Thank you.
Like all of the, everything you said is a good soundbite. Yeah. I could use any of it.
Do you want to do a B-roll like where she explains you to look, this is with
Yeah, maybe
sound?
just a little bit.
With sound or without sound?
No, with sound maybe.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, because, you know, we can always come back and if we want to do the longer, but we do want to do the longer.
Yeah, this was very concise.
Yeah, no, it was very good. Thank you so much.
You want more water?
I'm okay, thank you. I'm just checking they don't want me for any live.
If you have to go live, you have a beautiful view here that you can go live, no problem.
I'm just really hoping they don't want me today because, you know, they'll probably be asking me about something that I haven't been across all day. And
I don't know what's happening, how many...
Yeah, I haven't even been looking.
It's not 2 p.m.
yet. I'm focusing on this, really. But yeah, these screens are great.
Thank you.
Really good. How many people you got working here?
10.
Wow.
But it started again. It started from one and we grew gradually, at the same time.
Do you have a lot of people, like where are they mainly? Are they mainly ex-military or people that want to come work?
Not necessarily. I'll show you. Come.
Yeah.
Do you want to...
Where do you live? I feel for you. Miss Gavam was my favorite lookout until it got an anti-tank missile right through the window.
Should we do a couple of quick shots here and then show it? Is that okay?
Well,
just a little bit.
So we can see here, right?
Yeah.